Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for May 11th, 2023. The last few weeks, I've been talking about catastrophic near passages of large celestial objects. And I think it's interesting to see other people on, like, what you might call big name radio shows are picking up on this theme now. And it's amazing how poor people, the knowledge people have of this, calling it science. One clown goes on, for example, Joe Rogan's show, and goes, "This is science." And he claims that a pole shift from a magnetic field flip happens every 6,000 years. Just making this stuff up. Just making it up, literally. And so, here's the issue. The primetime radio talk show host, like Rogan, he's so controlled after he had his kind of, I don't know what he did. They called him out on some kind of racist statement or something. And, of course, at that point, they take these people aside, and they're talking about big money, big money. And so they take him aside and say, "Now you're going to talk about, you're going to have these guests on, you're going to have this parade of idiots on your show." And it turns into a clown fest. And really, Joe is a nice guy, well-meaning, good dialogue, but doesn't know anything about science. So his output is very, very controlled. But anyway, then you got these other people going on, talking about nuclear bombs going on over the Earth and complete devastation, and then another nuclear bomb going off. Just idiocy from people that don't know what they're talking about when it comes to Earth-wide disasters. And even if you did set a nuclear bomb off over some region and, you know, things were destroyed, there would still be potsherds. There would still be people. What we're seeing with the devastation is that there's really nothing left, not even a potsherd, not a bone, not any trace of humans being there. But you see the city, and like along the coast of Peru, you see these massive cities that go on for tens, 20, 50 miles, where they estimate, you know, 4 million people lived, and up to some estimates up to 40 million with not a trace, which means that there was a big catastrophe, and along with that was an ocean wave that was humongous, just came in and just washed everything away. Somewhere out in the middle of the ocean is all this stuff that's left over from these catastrophes. But now it would be covered with, you know, marine life or coral, or just in the sand or whatever at the bottom of the ocean, and nobody's ever going to see it again. But anyway, last few weeks I've been talking about what the real story is when large planetary objects, of course, in the form of a comet, because they're just charging the solar capacitor. And, excuse me, by the way, I'm still dealing with this voice thing. And so my voice is a bit weak. I'm trying to sustain it. It's just difficult to put together an entire hour. And luckily I don't do more than 1 hour a week. Okay, so anyway, this week I'm going to shift gears a little bit. And I've been on a few radio shows recently where I talked about the Communist Manifesto. And you've probably all heard of that. It was originally written in its modern form in the mid-1800s by Engels. And then what Karl Marx actually did is he compiled the various ways that had been used by the, just to be frank with you, the Jews, the Jewish banking systems that had gone back through history and the methods of infiltrating a country, taking it over and destroying it and installing a new group of people that literally came from outside and installing them in power. And so all of the techniques that are used today by the CIA, by the say the FBI to infiltrate agencies, the creation of both sides of the story, where you have, for example, pick a topic today, the disclosure movement or the UFO movement or the pick any topic. And that what happens is they create the side of the story they want you to believe and accept. But then the opposite side would naturally occur if they didn't create it. So what they do is they create the opposition. It's created opposition. So you find this, for example, that's why my work will not be allowed to even be mentioned on YouTube, because I'm real opposition. So what do? They go out and created opposition by funding groups and to try and pretend like they're doing what I'm doing, etc. And then they put them on radio shows or TV or have them have special conferences, spiffy web pages and all of this, to give them a presence to make it look like they're actually legitimate. And so anyway, and that's a standard technique, and that's a Marxist technique, is to control both sides of the dialectic. And so another thing they do is destroy the family. That's one of the core instruments for taking over a country. And they say specifically that as soon as the children are able to leave their mother, from the very earliest position, the state should come in and educate them. And so it's a little different now where the kids still live at home, but let's face it, when a kid, your kid is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, whenever they first go to school, kindergarten, first grade, preschool, whatever, you don't see them anymore. They come home, they eat, they watch some TV, but somebody else is running your kids' lives, indoctrinating them all the way up through college, university, graduate school, if they get that far. Somebody is educating your kid, and it ain't you. And so what's going on, in fact, the Communist Manifesto is being played out perfectly today. So when you had the No Child Left Behind, Common Core Education, that's the Communist Manifesto at work. When you have academia setting standards for education, so even if you have homeschooling, you still have to be accredited. Accreditation means that some outfit somewhere is requiring your kids to learn certain things. And those certain things come from the Communist Manifesto. Teaching your kids to be little, good little workers, that's what it's all about. To obey the government, to do what the government tells you, believe what the government tells you, and don't let those other people into your lives. So anyway, the way they initiated the Communist Manifesto in the United States was very subtle, and they came in through the women in the United States. And how did they do that? For example, the feminist movement, which goes back now 50 years, the first wave of feminists, and what they always do, here's the trick, here's the ticket that they always do. They pit one group against another. That you are, it's called victimhood, that you are a victim, and it's that group over there that's causing your problems. If it weren't for that group there, you'd be doing much better. And the women bought into this hook, line, and sinker in the United States. And so feminism got its start. Everybody was, we want to give women you know, their fair share. We want to do this. And so it's an easy sell, so to speak, because nobody wants to have women oppressed. We're, you know, we have women voting rights, etc. Women could take office, etc., or be in positions in companies. But here's the thing. It's the idea that they're victims, that their life is crap because of that group over there. It's those patriarchal men that are ruining the lives of women. And maybe there's some truth to that. When they talked to the proletariat in Russia before the Russian Revolution, there was a proletariat. But they play at it. They play the victimhood. They come in and they tell the proletariat. And they did it in the streets with pamphlets, with talks in the street, with marches in the street. They did it through the universities. Watch the movie Dr. Zhivago, a great representation of the Russian Revolution, how they turned the proletariat, the common worker, at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, into a force that was united against the wealthy people. And okay, so maybe there was some disparages, okay? But the communists and the Communist Manifesto played on it. They used that. And that's what happened with feminism in the United States. Whether you like feminism or not, that's not the issue. It's that that was the opening of the door. That was the planting of the seed. That was the fertilization of that seed to grow and to grow into victimhood. Then the next wave came along. Then the next wave, then the next wave, and built on it to the point now where the name woman has been erased from the dictionary. This year, the Cambridge English Dictionary removed the word woman. It is no longer an acceptable term in the English language, according to the dictionary. So that's the end result of women vying for their rights. And you see, the communist result is always the opposite of what they promised. So like the proletariat in Russia at the beginning of the Russian Revolution, they were promised they were all going to be equal, we're all going to have good food, we're all going to have prosperity. And there was never more starvation or death or disparaging livelihood situations than in Russia at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution under communism. They became slaves. And once again, I would suggest you go see the movie Dr. Zhivago with the intent of seeing what the Russian Revolution was like. And they have the character, the guy that was the university student leading the charges through the streets, etc., to bring about freedom for the proletariat. But so at the very end, here are the kids of the main characters in Dr. Zhivago working on a dam project that was orchestrated by the Communist Party. So anyway, the Communist Manifesto is now underway in the United States, and it is 100 different things. So when you see the border crossing, or the people in favor of illegal immigration or against illegal immigration, or to fund and increase the police at schools where school shootings are going on versus defund the police, or riots where they're looting and, you know, going after stores, specific stores that are, say, owned by white people. Or, you know, and the list just goes on. But what it is this is the Communist Manifesto at work. So somebody is behind this. Do you think that like the other day, which was at Nordstrom, I think it was, in San Francisco, on a given night, hundreds of people converge on this store demolish it, steal everything in the store. Don't you think that was orchestrated? Who's orchestrating all of this? So anyway, the idea is to take down the United States from within. And so this is not a revolution where, like in Russia, you had the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks fighting it out all over Russia. And then in the end, the Bolsheviks supposedly won the revolution, but nobody won anything, really. What really happened was by the time the revolution, when all the dust settled, you know, 20, 30 million people were dead from starvation and being murdered in the revolution. And the Rothschild banking empire had taken over Russia, just like they did in the United States. At the very same time, the Rothschild banking empire, which is the front of the Jesuits who run the Catholic Church, who had their tremendous wealth increase during the Middle Ages when the Spanish galleons were returning, and some English returning with massive amounts of gold that went to the Vatican to give that the Rothschild banking empire its start. And now the Queen of England, by the way, the coronation, which is still going on, that hapless family that calls themselves the Royalty of England, it's still going on, and they are the richest family in the world, based on that wealth that was stolen from the Incas, not so much the Mayas, but the Aztecs. Huge amounts of gold and wealth brought back in those ships, and ultimately landing in the Jesuits. Now, the Jesuits were not Catholic, and so I've talked about the history of the Jesuits before. They originated in Spain in the Middle Ages during the Inquisition, when the Catholic Church was killing anybody that wasn't Catholic, literally. So the Jewish people that lived in Spain had two choices. They had could either be killed and tortured and killed, I guess, in that order, or become Catholic. So they became Catholic, but with the intent of running secret societies and then eventually taking over the Catholic Church. So all of the bishops at the very higher level and the cardinals in the Catholic Church are Jesuits. And when they elect a pope, the pope is a Jesuit, not an original Catholic, there was a time when popes actually could come out of the masses, but at any rate, that's all part of this history. But at the same time that the Russian Revolution was going on, the Rothschild banking empire was setting up the Federal Reserve in the United States, and that then fell over into England, into Europe, I'm sorry. But England was controlling the United States, and that was their way to get back in to the United States and control it through the banking system, the European banking system, and that's still what's going on today. There are organizations, for example, Rhodes, Cecil Rhodes, established, he's from England, he established basically a program, it's called Rhodes Scholars, and where they handpick people from the United States, bring them to Oxford, where they educate them with the sole purpose of coming back to the United States to get into politics, where they're guaranteed they're going to be placed in high-level positions. So like Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, and over 7,000 Rhodes Scholars are now working at very high levels in government. So you find secretaries of state, you find very high levels in cabinet positions, people who are Rhodes Scholars. And that sounds like a big thing, like they're highly educated. But no, their entire purpose is to bring about the destruction of the United States and bring it back under the British crown. Read it. You don't have to believe me, Cecil Rhodes, the Rhodes Scholars. And look at who have become Rhodes Scholars and all the way up to presidents. Okay, so anyway, the original theme here was the Communist Manifesto, that it is alive and well. So when you see the various identity movements, and I'm not going to name any specifically, because there's so many of them, you can't even keep track of them all today, becoming big in the news, very violent, very extreme, very aggressive, being supported in a large scale and given a lot of support in terms of visibility, social media, news media coverage, the ability to go places, the ability to influence legislation, etc., identity politics. And it's all about victimhood, that every one of these identity politics groups are victims. Oh, and it's your fault. It's you did it. Yes, you, right there. And like I say, it all started with feminism. That was the key that opened up the door to everything that's going on today. And where are the first, I call them first order feminists, because feminism has taken on so many different turns and twists over the years that it's not recognizable in its original format. But most of those women, unfortunately, today are in their 50s, higher 50s, 60s, 70s. Many of them broke and alone. Many of them. And it's unfortunate, but only at that point in their life do they look back and they go, you know, what did I do with my life? I hated men. I worked at some kind of job career that all the money is spent, don't have a family, don't have any savings, and I'm alone. That's the final plight of the first wave feminist of 50 years ago. It's an unfortunate situation, but then they realize, if they have a half a brain, that they're the ones that initiated everything going on today that has destroyed the woman more than anything, to the point at which the word woman is not even in the dictionary anymore, because nobody can seem to figure out and how to define what a woman is. They have a lot of competition vying in their space. If you look at advertisement for cosmetics, brassieres, Nike shoes, tennis shoes for women, the advertising is being done by men, cross-dressing as women. And so women have been simply displaced out of existence thanks to the feminist movement. And so I hope these people, there's a lot of women waking up today and realizing this, young women, and going, hey, I don't exist anymore. I'm been phased out. There's no such thing as a woman. And so, finally people are waking up, women, and they have to do it. It's not something I can go out and do as a man, because, you know, I'd be called a patriarchal, controlling, trying to get women to come back to have babies and, whatever, all of the trash talk that you hear. So women have to go back and undo all the damage that was created by the feminist movement. And unfortunately, there were some good efforts, some good things that people tried to do. But what they didn't realize is they were playing into the hand of the communists and the Communist Manifesto. So at any rate, and it played through the university systems to the point where literally universities, as they stand today, should simply be, that's the group that should be defunded, and just, but they're getting tremendous amounts of money from identity politics groups. Universities now make their living not from tuition, not even from government grants for research, but from identity politics groups. Okay, switching gears a little bit here, but a lot of times I don't go into these topics. That is not a political statement. It is a statement literally of fact of what is going on today. And the entire purpose of Marxism is to get groups. It could be as few as two, like the Communist Revolution in Russia in the early 1900s, where they had the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks fighting it out. Or it could be hundreds, like in the United States today. Every day there's a new group popping up going, I have had my rights destroyed. It is the fault of those people over there. And all of these subdivisions keeps everybody fighting amongst themselves, etc. Mothers against sons, fathers against daughters, cousins against cousins, family members against family members, grandpas against grandchildren, grandpas against grandmas and grandpas against their kids, trying to raise people, young people in this world, between work cohorts, between companies, between, it's just everybody's. The more they can mix it up, the better. And the end result is while everybody's fighting, they come in and swoop up the country, take over, and while you're busy watching the evening news and watching the destruction of, say, a department store in downtown San Francisco, that is the distraction. That's to keep you looking over there while they're doing something over here. And that's what's going on. And there's, you know, the politicians selling out the country, the fact that Congress has absolutely no power whatsoever. And you see this pathetic scene over and over. Some congressman is grilling, supposedly putting on the hot seat some agency head or some department head or whatever. And nothing happens. It's just a dog and pony show. It's all theater. Okay, so anyway, as I'm going to jump off that topic. But my show, this little show here that started out 23 years ago, the same time slot on WWCR Nashville, Tennessee, Tower Number 2. It has literally been on this spot, 6 p.m. Thursday evening. It has literally been on this spot since the year, literally the year 2000. And so about 23 years now, this has been going on weekly. And all the archives, of course, are on my webpage. But I'm expanding, and I'll be keeping my shortwave spot for sure. It's something that is just part of my life now. It's like breathing. But there may be a day someday when shortwave is the only way to contact people, to get the message out. But also, with the modern age of podcasts and other methods of distribution, if you're listening to this show, you know, great, but there'll be a lot of other people who will arrive at this show because they're on different platforms. So that's why I don't really announce all the other platforms while I'm on this show, because my tried and true listeners on the shortwave, who listen to archives, maybe on my webpage, keep doing that. But there'll be hopefully a lot more people finding this show on these various other platforms. Okay, so enough of that. Okay, talking about Mother's Day coming up this coming Sunday, May 14th, Mother's Day. Get the gift that will keep on giving daily for Mother's Day, and that is water filtration. Very simply, I'm not going to spend a lot of time. You know what the webpage is, jmccwaterfilters.com, jmccwaterfilters.com. Go there, and what I would recommend is the MR5 whole house water filter. that filters water for the entire house. And one thing, you know, when you wash the clothes, you put them in the dryer, and then they spin dry, and you take them out, and there's all that lint. That lint is your clothes coming apart because of chlorine in your water. So you would literally pay for your water filter by saving money, and then your clothes look nice. You know, that's, if you use clothes two or three times and wash them, they start becoming very lifeless, the colors fade. They look old, they look used. And if you get that chlorine out of your water, which, by the way, creates no less than eight different acids, that when the chlorine mixes with water, it creates these acids, and that's what's destroying your clothes. And so the MR5 whole house water filter is on sale, and I recommend that you get what we call the best deal. The best deal is the MR5 whole house water filter, stainless steel, will last more than a lifetime. It'll be there after your house is gone, you know, from falling away. That stainless steel container will be there. In fact, there'll probably be people finding these in 10,000 years after our society has failed and somebody comes back and digs up. Holy cow, all these houses had this stainless steel container, and they'll open it up and the filter elements will be still there. They'll go, doggone it, this is a water filter. And they'll probably be able to take it and use it 10,000 years from now. That's the kind of quality that you get, the MR5 whole house water filter. Then the ultraviolet sterilizer, which is exactly what it says, ultraviolet bulb that kills viruses and bacteria. And that is a add-on that's optional, but most people get that. It's in the best deal. What we call the best deal, and then an extra set of filter elements. It's what we call the best deal. And it's normally $2,600, now on sale for $1,980. So literally about over $600 off. And that sale is going to go away real soon. So go take advantage of that. JMCCWaterFilters.com. Okay, so the Mother's Day sale is there. And now I want to do a little biology I'm going to do two things here. One, very quickly, when we talk about genetics, and that's been a topic that's been, oh my goodness, just bashed around completely. Here is the term, the basis for genetics. And I'm talking about human beings. The female, or the woman is another term, and I'm going to keep using it even though it's not in the dictionary, is the half of the human identity that it produces the egg. And I would say that is the thing that classifies somebody as a woman and has all the proper internal organs to then carry a baby and have a baby naturally, and so that's, and produce that egg, and that's the essence. And then the male provides sperm, and that fertilizes the egg inside of the female, and that's it. Biology 101 in its simplest format. Biology 101 is, that's what genetics is about, man and a woman. As simple as that. Anything else is fairy tale phenomenon, things that are going on today. So it's unfortunate that all of this is going on. But there again, if you understand, it's the Communist Manifesto at work, playing on people to make them believe that they are victims. Okay, well, that's where it's going. Now, I also want to talk about man versus shark. Now, this is an interesting comparison because the shark goes back in history in the ocean prior to the days of the dinosaurs. And they don't really know even where the shark came from. But in its current form, the shark, now the genetics of the shark are long-term stable, clearly, the DNA, and my goodness, the shark has been around for all that time. But the reason, one of the big reasons, is because the shark lives in the ocean. So whenever these massive earth-wide changes occur, the shark is very buffered. He has a big buffer around him, the oceans, and therefore basically does not have any requirement for changing. Okay, and then there again, I'm a proponent of the idea that Darwin was wrong. When Charles Darwin extrapolated small, minor changes, adaptations of animals, he said, oh, well, if this just keeps going on, you will have new species. Well, no, that's simply not true, and nobody has ever discovered a new species that generated from an old one, either in the fossil record or in the modern laboratory or any place else. It simply has never happened. But at any rate, then you have man. Now, man is a little bit different. Man does not live in the ocean. He doesn't have that giant buffer that when catastrophes hit, man is exposed to the elements, and really some of the worst, because man, unless he builds a shelter, really doesn't have any place to go. Unlike birds, unlike, say, a lot of different animals, they really, when there's a catastrophic event, man doesn't have any place to go other than caves and places like that. But man has intelligence. So that's the thing that separates man from other animals. When a catastrophic event happens, dogs, apes in the jungle, monkeys, they don't have any way of reckoning with it because they are animals. They are responding to their environment. Whatever the environment does, they respond. They need food, they go get it from the environment. They need water, they go get it from the environment. They don't build houses. And I just dare say that monkeys have not fared very well in the space race. Gorillas also have not fared very well in creating craft to go into space or go spacefaring or anything like that. It's man that is set apart because there's, let's go back to that old 1960s Broadway play. It was called, I think it was called Hair. And there's a line in there and about man. What a piece of work is man. How noble in reason. And it goes through all this litany of man setting him apart from the animal kingdom. Okay, so anyway, there's something about man. And by the way, man has a spirit. We don't understand a lot about that spirit, but there are individual spirits who live within your body. Some people might call it an energy field, but it's really not. Well, there's no way we can really explain it other than understanding it. And I saw an interesting interview between Piers Morgan, the English broadcaster, and the scientist. And he was grilling the scientist about the scientist was saying that, well, no, when he dies, his body will decay and the brain will decay and that'll be the end. And Piers Morgan just looks at him, and Piers Morgan is very, very assuredly looking at the fact that man has a soul, a spirit that lives with him. And I've talked about this on my show. In fact, in college and growing up in Catholic schools and Catholic college, etc., nobody ever taught me how to communicate with my soul. Nobody. Out of all of this religious education, etc., nobody ever sat down and said, here's how you communicate with your soul. So I learned how to do it myself. And so I can communicate with my soul. And by the way, also, I'm very aware that I have probably many guardian angels following me around, because the things that have happened to me in my life, I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for those guardian angels looking out for me. Because anyway, I won't go into detail, but that's another thing that's very, very real. But the interaction with your spirit is, it's what sets you apart from the animal kingdom. That's what sets man apart. Not only does man have a well-developed brain, but also has this spirit that interacts with the body. That's what, when you listen to music, that's what makes you excited or sad or melancholy or whatever the mood might be. That's your spirit. That's the spiritual side of your body. You know, dogs and cats and apes and monkeys and other animals don't experience that. They don't write music to make you happy or sad or feel excited or whatever it is, because they don't have a spirit. So anyway, man has this spirit also, but there's the issue of these massive earth catastrophes that occur. And the reality is the physical part of man really doesn't have a chance at survival. He's very subject to the environment here. Whereas, like I say, the shark is in the ocean. That's a huge buffer, but man does not have that buffer. So man is very much exposed on the surface of the earth. And even if you take all the preparations that have been made today, for example, military bunkers in mountains and things like that, underneath mountains to fend off nuclear attacks, etc. That's just child's play compared to some of these huge catastrophic events where you have literally mountain building, the earth changes, etc. So that brings up the following point, that since man is very exposed on the surface, for example, if one of these events were to occur today, you know, a massive, four times the massive Earth object coming by Earth very quickly, mountain building, pole shifts, tsunami waves, 2,000 feet high, 4,000 feet high, and, you know, massive earthquakes just destroying everything. Remember that Christ, one of his sayings was, every fall, every wall will fall. And the apostles said, well, how bad is this going to be? And he goes, there won't be a stone left upon a stone. In other words, everything's going to get shaken down to the ground. That's how bad it's going to be. You know, talking about the end day, the end times, etc. But anyway, the point is that man cannot survive these major events on his own. And man keeps resurfacing. We know that, as I talked about last week, in the really good, this new work by Mark Gaffney talking about the fact that there have been four major pole shifts in the last 120,000 years, not recurring on regular cycles, but nobody really knows exactly when these things happened. And the 120,000 years is just an estimate based on some peripheral information. But man keeps popping back up on Earth in spite of these huge, humongous Earth changes. But man doesn't have the ocean as a buffer, so how is man surviving these? And it turns out this leads to the possibility that man has a presence already in outer space, and that just like the shark, the history of man as a biological entity goes back as far as the shark, you know, prior to the dinosaur age. Man was in existence in our galaxy and potentially throughout the entire universe. We don't know, you know, that this biological entity that we're seeing here, you know, there's all of these illusions that one of the illusions is that Earth is the only place that has life in the universe. And that's hard to believe because even under the Antarctic ice sheets, it's teeming with life. It is just teeming with life forms that people have never seen before. They only exist in those locations. So it would seem very probable that man exists in many, many other locations in the universe. And so the idea that man only exists on planet Earth, I find preposterous. There are so many other places, including spaceships that were developed by man to simulate the environment that man survives in, and then put lots of people on these autonomous spaceships, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of people, to keep the human race going. And so that's one of the very important things about the space program I've always talked about, where the Chinese are very far ahead, is in putting large numbers of people into space. The American program, which is copied by the British and the English and the Europeans, is to put a couple people into outer space at very great expense, and that's the space program. It's absurd. It's a huge cost, and it has really no benefit. So what if you put three men on the moon, and then they come back? Okay, well, big deal. What do you do now? What's Act B? What's the second stage of your plan? And they don't have one. Oh, maybe we'll build a colony there. Yeah, but that's not going to last. What you have to do is build autonomous space stations, and then you can go down and visit the moon or stabilize the human genetic code so that it goes on for another 100, 200,000 years. And in the case of the shark, going back literally hundreds of millions of years, man would also go back, let's say, that far. Because man has intelligence. He doesn't have the ocean as a buffer like the shark, but he has intelligence. He knows how to take care of things. So, but could it be that man was completely obliterated on this planet, but in either other places in the universe, or if man has been moving between other locations and this solar system and his planet, then they would have autonomous space stations that could travel between the stars. Okay? And so that would mean they have the ability to take people off of this planet, preserve them, keep them living in these systems, and then when Earth recuperates from these devastating events, that they would literally then come back and repopulate Earth. And, of course, it would be like planting them. They wouldn't have any record of this happening. Yet, outside, there would be record of this repopulation going on of planet Earth. But the idea that man somehow evolved from the apes simply does not set right with me. It's simply a bogus story. Darwinian evolution was flawed from the very beginning because nobody has ever seen a species on Earth develop from another species, the way we categorize species. And species is really a bad term because it's based on physical characteristics. Once the people started identifying the DNA and the genomes, they realized that there's very slight differences between certain species that appear to be totally unrelated, like humans and octopus in the ocean, etc., And then species that are very similar, like apes and man, which is from outwards appearance at least, have very little in common. And so the point is that these species have not crossed, and man goes back probably hundreds of millions, if not billions of years. And once you get out to that point, it's towards infinity, because we don't have any reckoning when it gets out that far. I've talked about subjects like this before in this show, where we talk about how big is the universe. Every time we build a bigger telescope, we can see farther. We see more. Things that used to be dark spots now come alive with galaxies and structures in outer space that were never seen before. And so we can see farther. And this idea that the redshift is a measurement of distance is totally bogus. So cosmology, and therefore the history of man, the way they're currently taught, are totally flawed. And that's another reason why universities should simply be dismantled. They have wonderful buildings, and it's very impressive when you go up to a very nice university, all the buildings, everything else. All of that's really, impressive. And it would make one think that what goes on there is equally impressive, but it's not. It's a bastion of stupidity, literally, with people getting paid. And as long as people get paid for their job at the university, they can just spout whatever they want. Total ludicrous topics, and they get paid. But anyway, it's very clear, though, that man in his current form has been around for hundreds of thousands of years. And then before that, we don't know, but man does keep popping up on this planet, developing very advanced civilization. Those civilizations are completely wiped out in these huge catastrophic events, with earthquakes of magnitude 20 or 30 on the Richter scale, tsunamis that are thousands of feet tall. And so now to mention something called the Drake equation. And this is something that I'm going to work on. Now, what they did back in when I was probably in the 1970s, a guy named Frank Drake, very good hardworking astronomer, astrophysicist, developed an equation. It was a probabilistic equation that gave all different types of probabilities multiplied together. What was the probability of a planet existing in what they called the Goldilocks zone, where Earth and Venus and Mars exist, where you could have liquid water, for example? Okay, so what's the probability, and what's the probability that that planet would even have water? So all these different factors multiplied together, that it would have a protective magnetic field, that it would have a star similar to our own star that would provide sufficient energy, but not so much it would just torch it, and on and on and on. All these different factors. And it was based on science of the 1970s, which we know now is pretty much all totally fatally flawed. So the Drake equation has to be redone. The Drake equation has to be completely dismantled and put back together again. And if there are star-faring systems of groups of individuals like humans that have been around for literally hundreds of millions of years, then that changes the Drake equation, doesn't it? Because the Drake equation just depends on civilizations developing on their given planet and surviving and getting into outer space and etc. But there's other factors that overwhelm the Drake equation. One of the things that came out of this was the idea that maybe we should signal out into outer space and signal to see if other civilizations will respond. And the end result, thank goodness, people were intelligent enough to say, well, no, that's not a good idea, because if the people you contact are hostile and want to come and kill you and steal everything you have, like, here's a good example. If you take the Maya or the Inca or the Aztecs, what if they had the ability to signal to Spain and or England back in the, you know, 1400s? Say, hey, we got this advanced civilization here. Come and visit us. You know, we're real nice people. And the Spanish come over and rape and pillage and destroy the place. Okay, so anyway, back to the Drake equation. The Drake equation is in serious need of being revamped. And then with my science, the way we understand science today. Because man doesn't have simply this infinite amount of time to develop on planet Earth, because we know that very frequently he gets chopped off at the knees. So many, many things about the Drake equation based on outdated, really bad science. They did the best at the time. That's, you know, giving them credit. But it's time to redo the Drake equation with modern science the way we know it works today. Okay. So just one last comment here before the end of the show. Remember that this coming Sunday is Mother's Day. Give Mother the gift of clean water. What better gift in the world could you give anybody? And what I recommend is the best deal, the MR5 Whole House Water Filter. And go to the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, and where it says shop products at the top, go there and then select the MR5. And all of the details are there. There's a tremendous amount of information. So there's questions, frequently asked questions, etc., with the answers. So a lot of information there. And then, of course, my new book is also on the market, selling on Amazon. It's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myth, Magic, and Mayhem. So all of that available. And then my main website, jmccsci.com. And I'm out of time again this week. I hope you enjoyed this. These are topics that you will not hear about any place else in any other show at all. So anyway, this is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.